The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to October 2007.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show where you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Kathy Bush, and how appropriate coming from Detroit that we have the Big Three with us today. So let me introduce the panel to you. From the College of Engineering and Science, in fact, the director of its pre-college engineering programs. No, it's Dan, the DAPSEP man, Maggio.
Hi, Kathy. I'm going to be Ford.
You can be Ford. All right. And you know what people used to say that Ford stood for, don't you?
Fix or repair daily.
There we go.
Yes.
And Matt, that's not true. I
Found
love my
on road
folk
dead.
Guy. There we go. There, what is it?
Found on road dead.
Oh, I've not heard that. My dad would have loved that.
So we're fishing for local sponsors, are we?
There, indeed. There we go. And that's the voice at the far end of the table from our chairperson of the history department, as well as the keeper of our Black Abolitionist archives. It's Professor Roy Finkenbein.
Hey, Kathy. I guess since my dad was always a Chevy man, I'll go GM.
You're going. Actually, I should be GM because of Drew's job. Because
well, you could be Chevy division.
Oh, that's okay. True.
That's true if your dad bought those.
I'm German-American, so I could be Daimler
Chrysler.
That's
right. You could be Daimler Chrysler. Okay.
But I think we should all go on strike.
Yeah, really. Well, there is that. And finally, to my left, from the Department of Philosophy, it's Professor Beth Oljar.
Representing GM.
Representing GM. And that's right. And you got the good news that your traveling husband is going to be home at last. Yay.
Permanently.
Yeah, he's been all over the East Coast, hasn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. Mostly in South Carolina, but definitely he had to make an overnight trip to Newark, New Jersey. So visit Gucci, the Gucci people.
All right. Oh, everybody's favorite.
Yes.
Oh, bling, bling. Indeed.
What a lovely city.
Well, and really, yeah. Newark by the Bay. Indeed. Well, this is a show where you can send us questions about automotive manufacturing or
non-manufacturing. I want one of our people to give us the answer. Why is New Jersey called the Garden State?
Because of Southern Jersey.
Okay.
That's why.
The western part of the state,
yeah,
right?
The southern part of New Jersey is so gorgeous. The Jersey Shore, and Assateague Island and Cape May. Yeah, it's when you hit carcinogenic New Jersey, you know, from the north, Newark, Port Elizabeth.
And the southwest isn't so great either.
Yeah, that's true.
Camden, Trenton.
And that's their capital. He's like, that's scary on, so that's why. But you can send us questions about Camden or Trenton or anything
but
that you want
to. The governor's mansion is in Princeton.
Well, that's true.
And I asked when the summer I was there, why, if the capital is Trenton.
Yeah.
Is the governor's mansion in Princeton. They said anybody we thought enough of to elect governor, we would not make live in Trenton.
In Trenton, yeah, that's probably a good case. Well, you can send us questions on state capitals, and you can do that in any number of ways to get those questions to us. You may fax the professor at area code 313-993-1266. Or, you know, break down and buy one of those forever stamps and slap it on an envelope and send it to us, care of the College of Liberal Arts and Education, the University of Detroit Mercy, 4001 West McNichols Road, Detroit, Michigan, 48221. And we're going to finish up with a set of questions from Tim Hooker of Belleville, Michigan. And again, these are kind of all over the place.
They're great, though.
But they're kind of interesting questions. You know, they've been kind of leaping from the
here
to there.
How many does he have?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 more.
Oh.
Okay, so there were about 35 in total. But again, you know, one other thing we'd like to remind you is that as professors, we take grading very seriously. We're not, and we don't believe in inflated grades at the University of Detroit Mercy. So, you know, send us a grading scale, you know, what you want us to get. You know, 75%, 80%, or, you know, you could put it on an honor scale and make us get 90%, however you want to.
A's.
In your class.
A's don't start until 95%
mm-hmm.
class.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't make it like one of Sarah's teachers. Her homework policy is if it's not 100% done and 100% correct, you get no credit for that day's homework.
Oh.
Yes.
That
wow.
seems a little steep.
Wait a minute. What grade is your Sarah in?
Ninth.
Yow.
Yeah.
And this teacher, her name is Mrs. Mengele, or I mean, what's the name?
We've had some interesting conversations with her and the assistant principal, yes.
I bet you. Oh, how discouraging that would be
Livonia Stevenson.
For the kids in that class. Oh, that's a little tough. I had a ninth grade homeroom when I taught high school, and that's, you know, you got to do a lot of emotional cheerleading for that grade. Mm-hmm. You know, you really, poor kids. Okay, well, hope
that's
she changes.
A horrific age.
That is, yeah. How many cubic yards of earth were removed to make the Panama Canal?
Lots.
That's a lot. It's in the millions. Let's just put it that way.
I would say
4 million.
No.
Let me
take a guess.
500 million.
That's high, but
I'm calculating.
It's all right, Dan's going to solve it mathematically. Yeah. Let's solve this mathematically.
How long is it?
The Panama Canal. Is what? Is it 17 miles?
It's not long. I know.
Yeah, I mean it's at that very narrow isthmus. Yeah,
so
very narrow.
So
we're looking at millions of cubic yards.
How deep is it?
30 million cubic yards.
I was going to say, what am I up to? 60 million cubic yards about.
It's more than that.
Oh, then I'm off.
175 million cubic yards of earth. That's a lot of earth.
That's a lot of dirt.
I think that's like more than Panama.
So where did they put it?
That's what I'd love to know. That's what I mean. I wonder what they created.
They created a whole new Central American country.
Here you go. It's Belize now. That's what we did. We made Belize out of that. Okay.
Or the Falklands, right?
Yeah. 1 gallon of this can ruin approximately 1 million gallons of fresh water.
Salt. Can ruin,
like contaminate. Not salt. This is sadly, think Exxon Valdez.
Oh, oil.
Yeah, 1 gallon. Think about that.
And then, you know, all of the ducks and the birds and things get covered with oil, and they have to wash them with Dawn dishwashing detergent to get it off
them.
It's
clean.
Just so,
but they're squeaky clean.
Yeah, no.
just the poor little things look pathetic. So pathetic.
They do.
And
they look so awful.
Oil and
I know. That's just like so, so sad.
But hey, what a great advertisement for Dawn.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, right.
When the Exxon Valdez crashed,
we
Dawn
cleaned
was there.
The ducks of Alaska.
There really was a commercial.
There was, yeah.
Was there really? Yes.
Yes, there were indeed.
All I remember is, at the time, remember Rob Lowe had his indiscretion in Atlanta.
That's
and he got
right.
community service, apparently appearing in a sex education class. And somebody's comment on the news was, if Rob Lowe gets community service teaching sex education, then the captain of the Exxon Valdez should get community service teaching driver's ed.
Yeah, really. Wasn't he inebriated? Wasn't that the issue? The poor guy was like kind of torqued and driving that way?
He was well lubricated.
Indeed, yes. About how many people work on research in Antarctica each year?
500.
That's low. I would have thought like 100 or something. I wouldn't even have gotten that high.
Well, 800, I guess.
No, it's more than that. I can't
3,000?
It's 3,000 right on the nose, Dan. Did you figure that out?
I would have guessed 300.
Yeah, I mean.
So what is the penguin to human ratio?
I'm just thinking about the Al Gore film, you know, and when they're showing Antarctica and how bits of it are breaking
away.
Well,
but if you think about lots of different countries rotating research teams.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's true. Okay, I didn't think of it like that. But, I mean, that just seems like a lot.
Then if you added them all up.
Of people.
Well, that explains something from my undergraduate days, that the instructor for 20th Century America used Frank Friedel's textbook.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I remember reading on the dust jacket, inside the back flap, that he had lectured on 6 continents, including Antarctica. And I had this vision as a young undergraduate of Frank Friedel speaking to like several hundred penguins.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a point, I guess. All right. How many seconds are in 32 years?
Oh, my gosh. Okay,
it falls in your court, man.
Seconds in 32 years.
What's the song
years?
From Rent? 525,600 minutes
a year. Yeah.
So I would say times 60 or 30?
Times 32.
Times 32, 15, about 16 million.
This is a way bigger. It says 1 billion. There are 1 billion seconds.
Hold on, maybe it's 525,600 minutes in a year.
Right, so that multiply that by 60, and then that by 32.
So multiply my answer by 60, so that's 90. It's about 1 billion. What's the answer?
1 billion.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
But see, but look how you guys could do this. Like, you could break that down. I would be like, duh.
No,
I love it.
Maybe that's it.
I totally love it.
It's the best song in the show. They sing.
Oh, it is. That's a great. It's really good.
They're going to make me figure this out. But all these plates are stuck together, so I can't.
Well, there's those.
And
like
I have nothing to ride on.
Party store thing. Oh, you can peel him a parrot. You just.
Was he showing me?
I thought he was going for that.
Our engineer is holding up a calculator to the panel here through the window. Thank you, Michael. I always go for the calculator. No lie. It's my favorite. What's the nickname of the aircraft, the Boeing 737? It's a cartoon character. I actually made a film about this cartoon character. A very large young man, but very pro-education from the ghetto.
Fat Albert.
Fat Albert. That's right.
Oh.
I wonder why they would call that the Fat Albert. Is it the design of a 737?
Maybe one of the designers was Albert or something. Who knows?
It was big.
I guess. I mean, I'm just, it's not a 737 is as big as some of the other.
Might have been when it first came out.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Hmm. Because Boeing is in your part of the world, is it not? Okay.
Indeed.
True or false? Divorced women have more trouble starting new relationships than divorced men.
True. True.
But the men won't live as long, so it doesn't matter.
They get more time.
For those watching our last show.
It says true that studies have shown that divorced women have more trouble starting new relationships that they usually
cite. Who has custody of the children?
Well, yeah, I would think that would be one of the big reasons that way. At least I would think.
Yeah, my sister-in-law thought nobody would ever marry her again because she had four children.
Oh, she had children.
And I'm like, well, you know, my mom had four children when she lost her husband, and, you know, she got married again.
Well, there you go.
And we all turned out okay.
Absolutely. Okay, and our final question is, some African tribes refer to themselves as this instead of as families.
And it's communities?
It's plans? Very gender-oriented, this term.
Oh. Matriarchal units?
Well, it has something to do with women. That's true.
Yeah.
And it can't be mothers.
It is. It's motherhoods.
Just motherhoods?
Yeah. Oh. They refer to themselves as motherhoods instead of families.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah, which I do. I mean, I think that's totally excellent. Okay. Well, I don't know if we won or lost, but I think we should still send him a T-shirt.
Absolutely.
Sure, absolutely.
Just because the questions were so wonderful,
you know,
and diverse.
Send us some more. That's what we would say. Now, our next set of questions comes to us from Dave Chow, our good friend Dave Chow down at CCS.
From Berkeley.
Yeah.
Yay, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had sent a postcard to me this summer from his hometown of Medicine Hat, Alberta. And while we think about postcards, we're going to take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
I'm your host, Edwin DeWint, and today we have almost all the regular panel with us. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, Professor George Pickering.
Hey, man. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Wow. That's the first variation in decades, yeah. I think.
Oh, no, I've been working up to it.
Okay, all right.
First the mustache, then pleasure to be here. What's next?
Yes. And as always. On his right, the woman he can't keep his hands off from the Department of English, Professor Claire Crabtree.
What can I say to follow that up?
I don't know.
Hello.
Say it was okay.
Yeah.
There are people out there waiting to hear.
Was it good for you?
And on Claire's right, from the Department of History,
I didn't know any of you.
Professor Sarah Gravel. And on Sarah's right, from the Department of English, also Professor Hugh Kulig.
Well, I will just say hello and leave it at that.
I think that's the wisest
You've done
thing.
Enough damage. It was because of you that we were whispering.
Oh.
These were quotations, and you were to guess who said them. Who said, "Never lend your car to anyone to whom you have given birth."
Irma Bombeck.
Yes, Irma Bombeck, exactly. Philip Roth is a good writer, but I wouldn't want to shake hands with him. Who said that?
Somebody after Portnoy's complaint.
Exactly. and who was it? It was a woman.
Figures it would be a woman.
A writer. A writer of schlock, basically, now deceased.
In fact, one of her
I was going to say one of her novels was just reproduced by a computer, or a new novel.
Somebody's writing in the style of.
Yeah,
you can call it style.
Exactly.
Well, she's not known to have shaken hands with anybody.
No.
You're listening to an encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor program from October 2007.
Matt Mayo and the current panel of professors will return later this summer with more brand new episodes. So send your questions today to atp@udmercy.edu. Now, let's return to this classic episode of Ask the Professor from October 2007.
And we're back, starting off with questions from Dave Chow. He writes, Dear Professors, here we are again, a new semester and a new season of Ask the Professor. I take it that the entire panel had a wonderful time away from the Mary UDM campus in the summer and had time to recharge their batteries for another semester of academia. He said, granted, Kathy, you had to spend your summer on campus, but I bet it was fruitful as well. And it was. Thank you, Dave. You're always so considerate. A score of 14 out of 20, 70% will be considered passing.
Okay. No D's.
So no D's.
This is like pass-fail.
Yeah. This is sort of like C and stuff. Okay. What was the first American novel to sell more than 1 million copies?
Gone with the Wind.
No.
Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yeah, I was going to say something very much connected to that.
And that's so much better. I mean, what a better result between two novels.
Yeah, what was the famous Lincoln quote to her?
The little lady who started this great big war.
Big war, yeah. But, I mean, that book had such an emotional appeal to it. And then when it became a stage production, too, when they started having these traveling companies go about with that story, I think for Northern people who would never have really run into or had have any idea of the real cruelty, I mean, just the personal cruelty of slavery. Oh, yeah. It's very readable.
So can I slavery into the parlor?
Yeah, you know, which is, that's okay.
Go, Harriet.
Yeah.
There was a nice video piece on the online New York Times this morning about anti-slavery and Henry Ward Beecher.
Oh, okay.
Your brother's church.
Yeah.
And, you know, him bringing former slaves up and auctioning them off and going through this whole thing to get the congregation involved and kind of sympathizing. And
Hey, we do this to animals, okay? Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to do it to, like, people. Hello. Mm-hmm. Who was the first person to appear on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine?
Oh, I used to.
Did you, Dan? Good for you.
Was it? No. Jim Morrison would have been too late.
That was in the
Andy
50s?
Andy Warhol?
No. This is the 60s. Rolling Stone was not published in the 50s. In the 60s. So who do you think
Mick
would
Jagger?
Be? Not
Keith Richards?
The Rolling Stones, but...
The Beatles?
It's one of the Beatles. That's correct.
John Lennon.
John Lennon, absolutely. Mm. So that's kind of...
The man. The U.S. versus John Lennon is a good documentary, by the way.
Oh, no. Here we go. The state of New Jersey. Who would have thunk it? Oh, my. This is cosmic, Dave. I hope you were listening. What is the state of New Jersey's state mammal?
The sewer rat.
I mean, and what I love is what he wrote next to it. He said, who comes up with this kind of legislation anyway? Really, you got it right, Dave. I mean, who does?
That's a really good question. Who comes up with this type of legislation?
I don't even know if Michigan is a state mammal.
Probably. Yeah, our mammal is the, it's the,
I'm so afraid.
I want to say the beaver, but it's not, it's the
That's
wolverine.
A wolverine.
It's a wolverine.
But wolverines are not native to
but
Michigan.
Right,
yeah,
that's
beaver's
what I mean.
My state.
Yeah.
And they also can't beat B teams from North Carolina.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, really,
other.
But we don't want to go
so
down that road.
I was so happy when Appalachia State beat Michigan. I just loved
so
it.
So the okay. mammal.
But the mammal of New Jersey, and this is
the cow.
I would think that Tony Soprano would approve of this. Let's just put it that way.
A horse?
Yes, it's
I
a
was
horse.
Say a horse.
At least the head, right?
Well, yeah.
Wilbur.
But yeah, I suppose, well, you know that Tony had Piomai, the horse that he invested in on the series. But and
oh,
horse
he didn't
racing.
Cut the head off and put it in somebody's bed?
No, a really nasty person. On the show, set the barn on fire. I mean, had to get insurance money. I know it was horrible.
With the horse in it.
Mm-hmm. He was a very cruel man.
That is seriously wrong.
I know. According to the Gallup poll, who was the most admired woman in the United States in 1970?
Me.
He would have been four years old. Go on, you.
Pat Nixon.
No, somebody who was not real nice to Pat Nixon, which I'm astonished by.
Betty Ford?
Not Betty
Lady
Ford.
Lady Bird?
Not Lady Bird, because she was nice to everybody.
Politics?
Yes, she is, this woman. And in fact, she was...
Margaret Chase Smith.
No, this woman made a really cruel comment to Pat Nixon that when she was going to tour South America with her husband and she came to ask for advice about clothing...
It's not Kennedy.
She said to go buy anything off the rack like you usually do, dear.
Oh, Jackie Kennedy?
No.
Was it?
No.
No, that's...
Jackie Kennedy wouldn't talk like that.
No, of course she wouldn't. Mamie Eisenhower.
Yeah.
In 1970, how old would Mamie?
Who would know?
Yeah, I was going to say, what was? Did Mamie die that year or something?
I think we need Dan's math skills for how old she was.
I don't know. Well, I have no idea.
I don't remember. I mean, could be that I just haven't seen enough photographs ever, but I don't know that Mamie's ever struck me as a particularly stunning dresser.
Well,
but
she, I think I had the same problem, hence Kate, right?
Yeah, well, no, Kay Summersby, but...
Do you think they really did have an affair?
Oh, totally. I totally do. Yeah. I absolutely believe that. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people during wartime, you know, that there's an immediacy or this notion of what's left in the world or a loneliness or things.
I could be struck down by a bullet at any moment.
Like Hawkeye and Hot Lips on MASH. Yeah. They're one night.
But, I mean, she was a very striking woman, Kay Summersby. She had been a model, you know, for Worth. I mean, you know, a very high-class design fashion institution, I mean, at that point. Worth gowns were worn by, like, princesses, people that had their portraits done and stuff. So, I mean, I'm not saying anybody should cheat on their spouse. I don't mean it like that, but I think that can happen.
Oh, sure.
But I'm just surprised that 1970 Mamie Eisenhower, I would just be thinking more like Jackie Kennedy or Jackie Onassis by that point.
She has far too much class.
Yeah. Name the four animals that are subdivided into bulls, cows, and calves.
Four animals.
There are four different animals, and they're subdivided, categorized by bulls, cows.
Okay, well, cattle.
So that must be male, female, and, yeah, cattle, certainly, yeah.
Sheep?
No, because those
some
are rams,
lions,
and ewes.
Whales?
Whales are.
Whales. Okay. Mooses?
No, I would have thought that as well. Let's see.
Water buffalo.
both of the two remaining animals are often in... in, like, circuses.
Oh. Elephants?
Elephants, yeah. Elephanten. And I know this other animal is always in circuses because my poor cousin in New York at Madison Square Garden was bitten on the ear by one.
Tigers?
Not tigers.
I think if you were bitten on the ear by a tiger, you wouldn't have a head
left. But this poor kid was traumatized by this for life.
Can't be monkeys.
They're from the African subcontinent. And, gosh, if I give an answer.
Wildebeest.
Giraffes.
Oh, giraffes.
Yeah, so giraffes are, so a male giraffe must be a bull, female cow, and that they're giraffe calves. Huh. Okay. Which U.S. president fathered the most legitimate children? And I love how Dave highlighted the word legitimate here.
Mm-hmm. John Tyler.
Yes.
15, was it?
Yes, 15 children. But he wasn't he married twice? Didn't he have two wives?
I'm not sure.
I thought one of his wives had died early, probably in childbirth. But
I do know
no doubt.
He hadn't really.
He was one of the poorest of our presidents.
Yes.
Well, now we know why.
Yeah.
I mean that in every sense
of the word. Right. But yeah, he writes it. Lord knows how many were conceived illegitimately. Mm-hmm. But John Tyler fathered 15 children. So, but I thought he had been married twice. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong. Could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
We know he wasn't elected even once. So
no. He was like the Jerry Ford of his day. You know, there is that.
Unfortunately, our long national nightmare was not over.
No. Yes. Yeah, it was only just starting. Yeah. What year did the last Spanish-American war veteran pass away? Now, this is really, this answer
1979.
So, that's way too early.
What?
Now, this guy lived to be 110 years old. I want to give you that clue.
No, it would have to be after 2000, right?
And it wasn't after 2000.
Spanish.
1993.
Yes, right on the nose. You got it right there.
You know what? I actually did math.
I was going to say you get back from the war. Okay. See, Dan?
When was the war?
1890.
Mm-hmm. So 100, yeah. His name was Jones Morgan. And he passed away in 1993, supposedly, he puts in parentheses, at the ripe old age of 110. There's some dispute over many veterans' ages due to rampant underage enlistment, mm-hmm. which is true. Mm-hmm. I remember this past Sunday, coming back from Canada from Thanksgiving, on NPR, they interviewed the daughter of a couple who were celebrating their 80th wedding anniversary. And she was 17. No, he was 17 when they were married, and she was 14. And they're still alive. Both of them are living in the same nursing home, in the same room. They share the room.
Oh, how lovely.
I know. Yeah, and it was like Beulah, and I'm trying to think of his name. But they're having their 80th wedding anniversary. Isn't that amazing? But anyway, he did the same mm-hmm. thing that he enlisted in World War. He tried to enlist in the war when he was like only 15.
Right.
But he got caught. Well, I suppose in some rural areas, they probably didn't have birth records or written, you know.
There still are some people. There's a lady that they did an article on in the Free Press who was born in rural western Pennsylvania, and she's like, I don't know, in her 80s now or whatever. She goes went to Canada each year, but under the new rules, because she doesn't have a birth certificate, she has, I forget the name they give to them, the ones that you could get long after the
date.
That's not good enough for the U.S. government, so she can't get a passport.
Oh my gosh. That's so crazy. I mean, she must conduct business or have a bank account or something that they could prove.
Department of Homeland Security at its finest, no doubt.
Department of Homeland Insecurity.
Insecurity, you got that right. In what year did Mr. Potato Head switch over to using a plastic body?
Oh, gosh.
That would have
After I left all those ones under the couch and my mom discovered them, yes.
Oh, no.
Growing little tentacles all over
the place. Yeah, the one thing about Mr. Potato is after a while you could smell Mr. Potato Head. He got easier to find after a couple weeks.
I was just
going to
ask what they use, and you just answered my question before.
Yeah, well, I remember Mr. Potato that you just had the things to shove on the potato.
Lovely.
It was 72, a cool toy. Well, in 73, they had to double his size. Because of child safety regulations. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids could, like, pop that.
66, probably.
65.
65.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, like a lot of those little toys that they tell you not to buy for children between the
8 and 10. All these pieces kids can swallow.
Yeah. So I suppose that's true. I didn't think about it. We never tried to eat Mr. Potato Head's nose.
I never tried that either, or eat any of my little light, bright things.
Yeah. What are, like those little Barbie shoes and stuff?
Yeah.
And I guess, well, I bet we didn't have Barbies, so my friends did. Detroit's very own Island Park, Belle Isle, was temporarily renamed during World War II. What was it called and why?
Liberty Park. Victory Park.
No, this is named after a specific battle, a very famous battle in the Pacific. Wow.
Iwo Jima Park?
Bella Jima Park.
Bella Jima.
That's so neat. The Marines and Navy Corps reenacted the landing of Iwo Jima on Belle Isle as a public relations move. That is really cool.
Interesting.
Bizarre.
No. Did you watch the series, The War, that was on?
No, but I've heard wonderful things
about
it.
You should watch it when it comes back
on. I caught a little bit of it after you recommended it, and I taped one episode. So I'm sure it'll be released on DVD, so I can't wait to see all of it.
Oh, true. You know, I mean, it was certainly very American. You would have thought that only the Americans were really fighting and winning in Italy. But nevertheless, it was remarkably done. On the TV show Gilligan's Island, what was Mrs. Howell's full name?
Lovey. That's what he called her.
Anybody know? Eunice Wentworth Howell III.
Oh, Eunice.
Well, we'll stop
he
there.
He did call her Lovey. I'm
he
right about that.
He did call her Lovey. You are right. Well, let me thank the panel. Professor Oljar.
Thank you.
Professor Finkenbein.
Thank you.
Professor Maggio.
Thank you.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed in the studios of the Communication Studies Department of the College of Liberal Arts and Education on the McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced, technically directed, and always wonderfully done by Michael Jason. And our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. So until next week, I'm your host, Kathy Bush. Let's go, Red Wings!
We're back with another edition of Ask the Professor next week, so please plan to join us.